Welcome to the Bitcoin Source Podcast, the ultimate destination for all things Bitcoin. Today, we have an insightful guest with us, CK, former COO of Bitcoin Magazine, as well as the former managing director at Bitcoin Mag. Christian's deep understanding of Bitcoin's impact on money, social promises to provide us with valuable solutions in this space have been super instrumental. I know for me, I always looked up to CK watching him at Bitcoin Mag. So let's dive into some intriguing questions today. Welcome, CK.
Pleasure to be on the show, my man. Thank you so much for having me.
Most definitely. So CK, you know, we kind of go way back and a lot of people remember you from being on like Twitter spaces, evangelizing for Bitcoin. I know I was one of them, but I want to kind of like peel back the layers and talk about like your early days, like your commitment to bringing Bitcoin to the world and all that stuff, like your personal journey.
Yeah, I've told this story a bunch of times, but you know, I would say generally speaking, I'm someone who is like a big picture guy, and I'm definitely like I have a sense for like maybe doing something that's good for the world, like trying to push things forward on like a more just global level, not necessarily just focusing on oneself. It's funny, the journey through Bitcoin kind of shows you that one of the best ways to help the world is to focus on oneself and to make yourself the best you possibly can. But yeah, I've always kind of had like a personal kind of like leaning towards, you know, doing things that are net positive and like orienting towards that. In 2017, I discovered Bitcoin. I had a friend in the software sales space. She had introduced it to me. She, you know, we were talking about personal finance, and she was telling me how it was one of her best investments ever, and I should look into it. That week, I was actually going to a wedding in Mount Shasta. I was living in San Francisco at the time, and I binge listened to every single Laura Shin Unchained episode to the wedding and back on 2x speed. And by the time I got home from the wedding, it was like Sunday. I downloaded Coinbase. I downloaded Bitcoin. I bought Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Litecoin. This was in like fall of 2017, so like October-ish time. In the heat of a Bitcoin bull market and a crypto frenzy, and I was pretty much diving in head first. You know, I was working sales in a software company, wasn't super into the company. It was not really a good fit for me. I'd been there for about 18 months, and I was looking to figure out, how do I coach people on personal finance? Like, how do I turn personal finance into my career? And then that's when I discovered Bitcoin. And Bitcoin just immediately just hit me as like, wow, this is the next evolution of personal finance. This is the next evolution of money. This is the digital plumbing for value transfer. Like, all of that kind of hit me all at once. I wasn't a Bitcoin maximalist right away, but because I had been working at software startups that had raised funds over the last couple of years while I was there, I kind of saw what it took to raise money in venture capital markets. And you know, when I entered Bitcoin, there's these things called the ICO mania, or initial coin offerings, that, you know, were making all the noise, right? So you this startup would create a promise of how to build, you know, so and so on a blockchain, Uber on a blockchain, Airbnb on the blockchain, whatever, and then they would raise like 10 times more than the startups I'd been working for that actually had real products, right? So I kind of was like, wow, my spidey senses are going off. There's something off here. And I just started Googling, what's wrong with blockchain? What's wrong with ICOs? And the first people that came up were Bitcoin maximalists. And, you know, a lot of people who are outside of the crypto space don't understand that Bitcoin maximalists are pretty anti-crypto outside of Bitcoin. But I discovered the Bitcoin maximalists. I discovered Ansel Lindner, Bitcoin and Markets. He's still one of the best content creators out there. We co-hosted a podcast on Bitcoin Magazine for a long time called FedWatch, which he still runs, with a new host, Nolan Bowerly. But you know, he was the first person that was really talking real sense about the Bitcoin market, the crypto market, and the rest of, you know, the macro sphere. And, you know, he's the one who really introduced me to the world of Bitcoin maximalism. And from there, you know, it was clear that that's where the signal was. Like, it didn't take that long for me to be like, wow, pump and dump are crypto people. And then like Bitcoin people who are focused on building better technology and are morally, you know, guided and principled folks. That was the dichotomy. And it was very clear that, you know, I was attracted to the Bitcoiners. So 2 weeks before Christmas 2017, I put in my 2 weeks at my current job. If you go back and look at the chart, that's like within 5 days of the top. So I quit my job, you know, pretty much at the Bitcoin top in 2017. Pretty sure all my coworkers were clowning me and like laughing at me, you know, afterwards. But I was lucky enough. I asked, you know, for my birthday that year for a ticket to the North American Bitcoin Conference for my family. And I went to that event and I met the Bitcoin Magazine team there, you know, shook some hands, you know, said sales Bitcoin San Francisco, you know, got the CRO's card. And by mid-February, I actually had a job. So it took me about 6 weeks to quit my job and then find a new job in the Bitcoin space that was oriented around Bitcoin. But at the time, Bitcoin Magazine wasn't even Bitcoin only. It was BTC Media. It was Bitcoin Magazine, distributed.com, distributed conference series. We hadn't done the Bitcoin conference series yet. So a lot has changed, you know, during my tenure at Bitcoin Magazine. But I'm really thrilled to have joined the company. Had, you know, to kind of two formative years from 2017 to 2020. You know, cutting my teeth, doing sales, learning the events and media business. And then in 2020, during COVID, we had a, let's just say, a shakeup internally at the organization. And there's an opportunity for me to lead multimedia. I led multimedia, and then I got an opportunity to lead Bitcoin Magazine, period. It's just been incredible to lead Bitcoin Magazine, to help on the Bitcoin conference, and to really, you know, develop the leading and most prominent platform for Bitcoin only on the planet. So it's been a blast. I recently left Bitcoin Magazine. I'm working on a new project that we'll be announcing soon. Still in the Bitcoin space, so really excited for that. But yeah, I mean, that's my story.
You know, that's a super insightful approach to being orange pilled. A lot of people have heard that story a million times. Obviously, this is for my audience, to people that are new to you, but I just think that like hearing your voice, like if I close my eyes and just like listened, I'm like, everybody knows that that's CK. Like if you've been immersed in this space for the last 7 years or so, like if you don't know who CK is at this point, it's like if you're a Bitcoiner. So like, I just wanted to say like, you know, that journey that you had, like all those different experiences, like from walking away from your traditional forms of income to trying to jump into an industry that's considered fringe or taboo, and to actually make the accolades that you've made in such a short amount of time, definitely needs to be championed. And I'm glad that you were able to tell that story on my platform.
Yeah, man. Well, hey, I appreciate that a lot. You know, I'm lucky that the company that I worked for was so well positioned to make an impact in Bitcoin specifically. And you know, my whole philosophy on life is how can I create good outcomes for as many people as possible? So while I was at Bitcoin Magazine, and especially while I had the opportunity to lead Bitcoin Magazine, the whole mindset was, okay, how do I use Bitcoin Magazine to create great outcomes for Bitcoiners? And it was very obvious. Give Bitcoiners a platform, give them resources, help discover Bitcoiners, and put out the best knowledge about Bitcoin on our platform by creating a community and resources around the Bitcoin community itself. So, you know, I'm just lucky that, hey, I had that mentality and I had the platform. I was, you know, right place, right time, right person. And I was able to put that into action. And, you know, that's the reason why people know me, right? It's because I helped a lot of people. You know, I help people publish book, help people get published on Bitcoin Magazine, help people speak at the Bitcoin conference. A lot of people formed companies. A lot of people got careers just by leveraging the platform that, you know, I was stewarding at the time.
100%. I have to agree with that. You've helped me out tremendously and so many other of my peers in this space. But I know that you're bullish on Bitcoin, of course. And I've heard you speak about this numerous amounts of times, which is the shortcomings of fiat. So in your view, CK, what are some of the most pressing issues with fiat currency right now? And how does Bitcoin offer a potential solution to some of these challenges?
Yeah, so this is a really great question, and it's very complicated to try to answer it, but I'll do my best to put it in my own words and as simply as possible. The best way I can describe this is that the whole point of money is a good that allows us to measure and communicate value. That's the point of money. If you want to measure and communicate, you need to have a consistent substrate in order to do that, right? So let's think about how we communicate in words. Well, words are pretty consistent. They're not 100% consistent, which is like why you need context, why things can get lost, and people can get confused. And that's why, being as specific as possible is important. But, imagine if your word meanings were being manipulated on a quarterly basis by, some arbiter. Like, how could you even control your own and measure your own communication? All right, now let's talk about, let's say you are building something, right? You're building a home. Yeah, you're an engineer. You're trying to get to space. You work for SpaceX. Okay, well, what do you use to do everything? Well, you use the metric system, which is based on water. You know, 0 is freezing, 100 is boiling. Everything else is derived from that, right? So it's based on nature. And what the metric system allows people to do is measure and communicate information about physics space and it allows us to create massive feats of engineering, and it allows us to scientifically make decisions around how to manipulate our environment around us to create the outcomes that we want. So now let's talk about economics. Well, economics is a realm where well-meaning and well-educated people think it's completely fine to manipulate the substrate for measurement of value, right? So an economy is a lot of individuals, the individuals that are interacting with each other, they are trying to make decisions about how to allocate resources and how to spend their time and effort. And those decisions are largely driven by what's profitable and where the money is flowing and what the money effectively is telling you to do. So people follow the money and make pretty much all of their life decisions on how to allocate their time and resources based on a substrate of communication that is known to be manipulated. And people think it's actually the right thing to do. My brother is a doctor, and he thinks that when Jerome Powell talks about how 2% target of inflation was derived over the last 25 years and how they can't actually get it, but they do their best, he thinks that is completely logical. But the reality is that the entire planet is operating on a measurement and communication system for value that is disjointed and manipulated in severe ways. So how can we allocate resources? How can we spend our time with effectively if all of that is distorted? And if you look at, how that plays out into society, how that affects humans, right? Your ability to, one, make good decisions and impact your life positively affects every element of your life. And your inability to do that negatively affects every element of your life. And then that's compounded by the society that you're in. If we are right about how bad government DMV equivalent of money is in terms of as a tool to measure and communicate value, then it's impossible to even grok how much human productivity, effort, happiness is being dampened down, distorted, and manipulated by the fact that that system is not sound, that system is not reliable, that system is not fixed in science and not fixed in physics. And then, really what you look at Bitcoin potentially offers us a new substrate to do that. And that's why I get so excited about Bitcoin, because it's not about getting rich. It's about, here's this new way that humans can communicate and make decisions that's more scientific, that's actually so scientific and so grounded in nature that it has not ever been seen in human life ever before, in human society ever before. We've never had a way that's this scientific to communicate value and make economic decisions. So it opens a whole new paradigm. And that's why, you know, my shtick is that no one is bullish enough, because it's impossible to be sitting in this paradigm of dysfunctional money and then think that you can imagine what the new paradigm is going to look like. You're not that smart. It's one in a billion people that can actually do that. It's the Nikola Tesla of our generation. So unless you're the Nikola Tesla of our generation, like, you're off. Like, if Bitcoin works, like, you can't be bullish enough, because you can't see what that future will look like. And a great example is, go back 100 years. You know, Bitcoin is at least a 100-year project, if not a 1,000-year project, if not a 10,000-year project. But let's just say it's a 100-year project, because, you know, that's kind of the arc of this block subsidy, which is Bitcoin pays out miners to keep it alive with issuing out part of the 21 million supply. So that block subsidy is 140 years. I think it's fair to say it's a 100-year project because of that. So let's go back 100 years. 100 years, 1923. What did the world look like back then? Well, automobiles weren't prevalent yet. Europe was still ruled by monarchies. New York City was literally a shithole, as in there was horses and carriages as a primary way of, you know, traversing that city, and they shit everywhere. So like now try to ask someone from there to like forecast what 2023 is going to look like. They can't, and they weren't bullish enough. Period. So now like add on the paradigm evolution that is Bitcoin to our ability to allocate capital, and then try to like forecast that into the future. That's really what we're up against right now in terms of trying to think through, if Bitcoin works, if hyper Bitcoinization happens, what that's going to look like.
And that was so true what you said, like analogy about New York City and just going back 100 years. You don't really think about that until someone kind of places it in front of you. And that just reminded me, and I know you've probably seen this on social media, but a lot of people are coming out of Canada right now and they're complaining about the massive inflation rate because of some of the policies that Trudeau has done. But it always reminds me, like, when I see people saying, I'm making $40 an hour in Canada and I can't afford groceries, or I can't afford to pay for my rent, or put petrol in my car. And it's like, what? But then it's like, me being a Bitcoiner, I understand that this massive overspending, this massive overhead of government monetary policy, it starts to trickle down and start to, you know, kind of embrace society in all the worst ways. And I just see people on Twitter, social media, kind of like giving Bitcoiners like, you know, a tough time if the price isn't high. And then on the flip of the coin, they'll start complaining about the cost of groceries or oil or products in the store. So it's just interesting to see and hear it, man.
Yeah. And I mean, if my interpretation of that is like, they call it the cost of living crisis, but I would say it is the fiat resource allocation crisis, right? Like, we live in a time with so much abundance, yet we waste 60% of the food that we grow. No one even eats it, right? So that's a resource allocation crisis. And that is, and people don't realize that the poorness of their fiat, the weakness of their measuring and communication tool for money and for value, is effectively what is creating both this facade that, hey, I'm making so much money, yet it buys me nothing. And at the same time, we are not building and growing and shipping the things that people actually need, right? So it turns into this world where everyone has plenty of money, not enough money to actually get you anything that you need, right? And it creates this like almost synthetic scarcity. And I think, again, when I look at the world, I think of everything as protocols, operating systems, and ways for humans to actually scale better and allocate resources better. That's everything that we do is built on that. It's either in reaction to that, or it's to build the better iteration of that. So I even think of religion as that way. like people don't think of like Jewish based Christianic. I don't know the proper terms. I'm not really that adept at communicating about religion, but these monotheistic religions, they actually showed people a way of life that at the time made them more competitive than people that followed other religions. And it helped them scale and organize more effectively, which turned into them being able to wield violence more effectively, which turned into them building bigger, stronger societies that eventually dominated the world. This is it's a mental operating system. It is a way of life that creates better scale. I think the same is true for Bitcoin. Bitcoin is a mental operating system that creates better scale. So, like, you can't compare a 50 person village to a 100,000 person empire that is organized and morally aligned and intellectually committed to the church. You can't. So, like, you can't compare a tiny country that has its own, like, little tiny fiat currency that is a free-floating currency that's not an international currency to what Bitcoin will bring, right? Like, these two, like, that is, like, the level of innovation. Like, Bitcoin's going to bring the next order of magnitude of scale to what humans can do. And ultimately, like, hey, people will make maybe comparatively less money, maybe even a percentage-wise less money, but they're going to have exponentially more abundance, right? That's what people are, like, people are rubbing up against this, like, why in modern life is our lifestyle worse? We should have more abundance. And the only logical answer is our institutions are falling apart. The main one is the dollar system, and that dollar system is the foundation for allocating resources, and we are feeling that. Like, that's what they're feeling with the cost of living crisis. And that's, again, that's why, like, I think Bitcoin is a human imperative. We need to get that next level of scale. Otherwise, we're going to fight, right? What's the main vision of the future right now in the Western world? Well, it's this dystopian vision of the environmental calamity that's upon us. Like, everyone who's a millennial thinks that that is upon us, right? And what's the only way to solve that is needing less resources, having less people, right? It's like this Malthusian vision of the world, and it assumes less scale, right? And what Bitcoin enables us to do, again, the promise of Bitcoin, the vision of Bitcoin, is being able to scale more, have more resources, have more abundance, have more people. That's the vision.
Yes, and you know, one of my favorite books, which is a book that you actually put me on, The Mandibles, kind of talks about this exact concept. And when you look at people reducing resources to kind of make things hit this equilibrium, I always think that collaborating is pivotal in the Bitcoin space. And, you know, when people don't realize that we are all better together, Bitcoin has this kind of collaborative nature to it, whether it's from the core development stage, the podcasting stage, the media stage, it's all about helping everybody else kind of bolster their ideas and their signal about what this thing is, as long as the signal is legitimate and you're not trying to, like, shill something. CK, I wanted to ask you, like, you know, how have you seen the Bitcoin community really come together to advance its principles and initiatives in the space, you know, outside of what they kind of put on the media to kind of create this FUD? Like, I know you're kind of more of an insider in this kind of ecosystem. So I wanted to know from you, like, what kind of advancements have you seen with people being really collaborative using Bitcoin lately?
So I guess the question is, like, how is Bitcoin escalating? Like, how is Bitcoin actually being used to benefit people? Is that, like, the key question?
Yes, in a collaborative aspect. Where I'll give, like, you an example, like how Nostr kind of blew up out of nowhere, and you had, you know, Jack Dorsey kind of funding it, and other people kind of using Zaps to kind of help people that are content creators or, you know, people in the space that have something to say, like, that kind of nature of collaboration.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the big things that Bitcoin does is Bitcoin is a sound monetary system, and it has really well thought out and well aligned game theory that I think really resonates with how human beings naturally want to behave, So it doesn't really require you to make that many unnatural sacrifices in order to kind of like fit into it. And I think that's why things like the value for value economy that's kind of like building up with Noster and podcasting 2.0, that is why the incentives around miners and exchanges funding open source development is kind of perpetuating itself. When I joined Bitcoin, the idea of people spending their Bitcoin was kind of a crazy idea. It's almost like an ebb and flow. There's like the spend the Bitcoin phase and the merchant adoption phase when Bitcoin was way too early. And then there's like the rise of the store of value narrative, which I think is like a very, very good and positive narrative for people's mental models. And now we're kind of coming back to, okay, but Bitcoin's still money. Right. And Bitcoin's still a mechanism for transferring value more effectively over digital communication protocols like the internet, like Noster. So ultimately, if I want to send a micropayment to someone that is a fraction of a cent, you know, that might be worth a lot more in the future. I'm spending and replacing right now. And now there's like really fluid ways for me to do that because for a while, it was actually more friction to send Bitcoin. And now because of Lightning and because of these kind of compounding protocols, that friction is being removed. And the utility of sending Bitcoin, supporting someone with Bitcoin, you know, supporting a creator, developer, whatever with Bitcoin is becoming better. So that friction has gotten a lot less over, I think, the last like 2 or 3 years. And I think that that's going to increase exponentially. So not only is Bitcoin better money for saving, but ultimately, it's going to be easier, more liquid money for using. And yeah, people will not be incentivized to necessarily spend. But like, we live in a weird world right now where we're not incentivized to save. And that's creating really fucked up outcomes too. So I think like Bitcoin creates like an equilibrium where it's like the baseline is saving because your money is not being diluted. And then if something creates enough value for you, you will spend. And it will be easier to spend. It'll be easier to send because of the liquidity, because of the technical advancements that are within Bitcoin. So that's the trend that I've been kind of seeing. I think that that trend is going to go up exponentially, leaving the haters and the doubters looking like complete idiots. Bitcoin's not an inflation hedge. Bitcoin's not replacing Visa. Bitcoin's simply better money. Bitcoin is a better substrate for making resource allocation decisions in your own head. Like, using Bitcoin is thinking in Bitcoin. And I know I'm going on a tangent. I'm not really talking about what you asked, but I just think that like that's such an important distinction for people to like understand. Like, this is a paradigm shift. It's not a stock. It is a paradigm shift. So you either think that's a paradigm shift consistently or you don't. But like, you know, like, I don't think any Bitcoin will say like Bitcoin will do what its destiny, you know, what we say it's going to do, unless it's a paradigm shift. But just to kind of like, you know, kind of wrap up this thought. When I got into Bitcoin, people weren't spending Bitcoin. People were very concerned about open source developer financing. People were like, if we can't print money for developers, how are we going to fund the system? And what I have seen is that those doubts have been largely resolved based on the fact that the incentive system actually works, right? It's a good game theoretical incentive system. And, you know, I really would say is like, I think that's going to continue. I think that's going to be obvious in the future. And ultimately what we're seeing in terms of like, here is the existing fiat system, here's the burgeoning Bitcoin system, is like Bitcoin is just going to have more growth. Bitcoin's going to have more velocity. The Bitcoin economy is going to have more vibrancy. And then ultimately what's going to happen is as fiat declines and Bitcoin rises, when they get to parity in terms of liquidity, that's when this goes vertical. Like that's when, if you're watching the video of this, I'm moving my fingers in an S. Like that's when we hit parabolic on the S. You know, based on me being an insider, based on me kind of paying attention to, let's just say, the critical narratives and then seeing the game theory, you know, effectively show us that those narratives are probably overblown or incorrect, I think is super, super bullish. It's definitely not priced in. And I'm really excited to see, you know, what the next 4 years hold in terms of, like, let's just say the vibrancy and the sustainability of the closed Bitcoin ecosystem. I think like that's really, you know, what we're going to see taking the next steps here.
And how could you not be bullish after hearing that kind of response? You know what I mean? So, CK, I wanted to really ask you too, like, this is the last question before we wrap, but I really wanted to find out more about the looking ahead. And I remember you saying very early in this conversation that you're very big on collaboration and you're the former COO of Bitcoin Magazine. And you said that you were working on something else. Of course, you can't disclose it, but I really want to get into the intricacies of, you know, some upcoming projects that you have or things that you feel you can be more impactful for outside of Bitcoin Magazine that you can build. So I'm kind of just like a little curious to say, like, how do you look at collaboration or building other things outside of what people know you for? Because everybody knows CK at Bitcoin Magazine. And I think that when they see the word former, or they say like, oh, he's not with Bitcoin Magazine, people have tons of questions. But I think the type of person that you are and the personality that you have is that you're very big on being ubiquitous in the space and not having, you know, not being like a one trick pony, being able to kind of collaborate with other people and build great things so that you're not just labeled as just CK at Bitcoin Magazine. You're CK, the Bitcoiner that has built and helped so many people in the space.
Oh man, well, thank you so much. I appreciate that. I'm really not in position to publicly talk about what is coming next, but I will be in Bitcoin. I will continue and hopefully to an even greater extent be able to create positive outcomes for Bitcoiners and maybe even help a different subset of Bitcoiners moving forward at my new role. But generally speaking, y'all, like, look, my relationship with Bitcoin Magazine is still incredible. I'm excited to publish and be a part of what they do. I will be speaking at Bitcoin Amsterdam. That's not been publicly announced yet, but you know, it's pretty much said and done. And I will be speaking on behalf of my new organization. You know, I'm going to be publishing on Bitcoin Magazine. I really do think that, you know, when I'm ready to announce what I'm doing next, that's going to be a great vehicle for moving Bitcoin forward. And then, you know, inversely, looking back, you know, I'm very proud that, you know, Bitcoin, I've been a part of building the Bitcoin Magazine platform, help Bitcoin Magazine go Bitcoin only, help build the Bitcoin conference, Bitcoin infrastructure, Bitcoin social infrastructure. You know, I still think people should and can tap into, right? So editor at BitcoinMagazine.com. If you want to contribute, if you work for a Bitcoin company, you have news, you know, you send stuff there. We've published 8 books. So far at Bitcoin Magazine. So if you're an author writing books, you know, I think that that's an incredible way to, you know, to leverage the Bitcoin Magazine platform. I was just diving into Crypto Sovereignty by Eric Kaysen, a book that Bitcoin Magazine published, and I'm really excited for. I'm actually, after this, in like 45 minutes, I'm going to be doing a Spaces with my man Ryan Rasmussen from Bitwise. We're going to be talking about Grayscale having probably a little bit of a surprising victory against the SEC in court around their trust and the process for approving a Bitcoin ETF. So we'll be having conversation around that on social media. But just to kind of wrap it up, you know, I'm on Twitter or X. I'm on X. I'm on Nostr. I'm trying to spend as much of my effort on Nostr as possible. And if you want to engage with me, shoot me a DM, tweet at me or whatever. And then my past life, still relevant for Bitcoiners listening, leverage Bitcoin Magazine, just like Dadu has, just like I have personally. You know, I'm just someone who has leveraged Bitcoin Magazine, that platform as well, to move myself and Bitcoin forward. And then, yeah, I mean, on social media, I'll be announcing what's next and, you know, hopefully I can come back on the show maybe. And then, you know, we can talk about that.
There's definitely the man, the myth, the legend, CK, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, brother, for having this conversation with me. This is super insightful. I hope that it is helpful for all of the Bitcoiners out there that are curious about this digital paradigm shift that we are enduring. So CK, thank you for being on the Bitcoin Source, a Bitcoin conversation. Have a good one.
Thank you, man. And yeah, hey, we are living through hyper-Bitcoinization. It's right now. So enjoy it. It's a wild ride.